Hey, it's Matt. A quick note before we get started today. This is a repeat of a show we aired last month, so we can't get your questions and comments in front of our panel, but we would still like to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and what topics you'd like us to cover. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we're talking about issues facing women veterans. A new project is launching soon to prompt open conversations about these issues, many of which advocates say haven't been addressed for a long, long time. And a quick reminder, disclaimer, before we get going, we're going to be talking to our guest today about sensitive topics like sexual assault, abuse, and PTSD. Joining me now are four guests. Lisa Wilkin is chairman of the AMVETS National Women Veteran Committee. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
Dorothy Simpson Taylor is executive director of the Sister Soldier Network. Dorothy, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Penny Johnson is Indiana supervisor for the National Service Office for Disabled American Veterans. Penny, welcome.
Thank you.
Emily Quillen is Human Resource Officer at Aspire Indiana. Emily, thanks for coming on.
Hey, that's actually Housing Resource Outreach Specialist. Thank you.
Okay. Can you repeat that again? Housing Resource
Outreach Specialist.
Gotcha. Okay, 10-4. Appreciate that. Lisa, let's start with you. Can you tell us about this new project to start conversations about women veterans? How was this idea formed?
Well, this idea was formed over years of advocating and being with other women veterans and noticing that we have many issues that need to be addressed, which we're all working on, but noticing that sometimes the conversations that are had about the topics that affect women veterans really only skim the surface in the places where they need to be in depth. And I noticed at women veteran retreats or at private or meetings that women veterans would have in-depth, meaningful conversations about issues and strategies to fix those issues. But when we get in public or within our organization's meetings, we revert back to doing what we are taught as women, and somewhat as women in the military, to communicate in the room in a way that the room will best receive what you're trying to bring to them. And we've been doing that for so long, we haven't had the meaningful conversations that need to be had. We're just having the conversations that are acceptable. And because of that, we haven't brought the meaningful change that I see starting to happen now.
But, I mean, I don't know. I'm just now hearing about this, of course. It takes those sort of initial conversations to get to that depth point where you can have the more meaningful conversations. I mean, the talks that you've had up until this point have had value, though, to the conversation, right?
Oh, yes. They've had tremendous value. And what it has done, the talks up until now, have brought attention to different topics that face women veterans, whether their struggles while they're active duty or in the transitioning period, getting benefits as disabled women veterans, or receiving the recognition for their service. So those talks up until now, we have moved the ball forward, but with some recent incidents in the national news, the Fort Hood incident with Vanessa Gillian brought this to the forefront. And with the civil unrest, with the inequities in the United States, have brought it also to the forefront. And so that's why Dr. Dottie and I had a conversation that it's time. And so, and basically, it's time to go all in and have the in-depth conversations that we need to be having.
So to get deeper, to get closer to the heart of the issue, what would those conversations look like? And of course, we'll get into some more of that this hour, but I don't know, from where you are, what do we need to talk about?
We need to talk about the service of women veterans, that women proudly serve, that we're the fastest growing subpopulation of veterans, that by 2030, we're going to make up almost 28% of our armed forces, and that our Department of Veterans Affairs is doing its best to catch up and be ready to handle care for women veterans, but they're not there yet. And we need to have conversations of where that can be improved. We need to have conversations about women in service so that we are no longer invisible. Because right now, when you go to the grocery store and you see that woman in her Army t-shirt in the produce section, a lot of people assume she's wearing her husband's shirt, not recognizing that women proudly serve. And so we need to have that conversation. We need to have a difficult conversation about military sexual trauma, MST. What is it? What does it mean? How is it handled? Why is it handled that way? What's the cost of military sexual trauma? Not just the human cost, but the monetary cost within the Department of Veterans Affairs, within DOD, within our society. We need to talk about inequities between men and women veterans, in how much we receive in veteran disability compensation, how difficult it is to get compensation, and how we are perceived within our local communities and within our own veteran community. And so just more in-depth conversations. And, you know, as an example, the first veterans organization that I went to join when I got out of the military, I filled out my application, I had my check written out for membership, and as I'm filling out the application, it asked me for my wife's name. So I just asked, hey, you know, shouldn't this say spouse's name? And the response I got was, oh, are you going to be one of those? I knew right then that probably wasn't the veterans organization for me. And so we need to have those conversations about how we are received in the veterans organizations as well.
Has anything like this been done before, at least to this scale? Obviously, there have been conversations about women serving in the military and conversations and big news items about some of the things that you've talked about. But what you're trying to do, has this been done before?
There have been programs in the past. We have a Women Veteran Conference, and topics are discussed, not in depth like what we're going to do. And I believe, Dr. Dotti, you might be able to speak to this a little bit because you've put on several programs that touch on these issues.
Dotti, I'd love to hear from you.
My concerns have been, of course, the invisibility. But mostly what we have to do as women veterans is seek national support for our causes. There is a Center for Women Veterans, Department of Veterans Affairs Center for Women Veterans, that has the research is all about what happens with women veterans and our issues. There is a and because Sister Soldier Network deals with race and gender, we also correspond with the Center for Minority Veterans, that is the Department of Veterans Affairs. What we found is that there's a series of conversations that happen at the national level that sometimes don't trickle down to the local level. And what we are many times handling are issues like military sexual trauma. We're talking about gender and race. We're talking about issues like older women veterans. We're talking about the prominence of suicide amongst women veterans. And sometimes, well, all too often, on local basis, at local levels anyhow, these conversations are silent, and homelessness amongst women veterans who have served. These are silent conversations that we have within our own group, but it's very, very challenging to have broad conversations in these areas.
Dorothy, can you just introduce us to the Sister Soldier Network?
Certainly. You can call me Dr. Daddy. That'll be just fine.
All right.
Sister Soldier Network is a brainchild of a Korean-era veteran and myself, one. I'm a Vietnam-era veteran. And we looked around in our community in Iowa and here in Indiana and discovered that there were many, many women veterans of color who wanted to have a voice and wanted to communicate with one another. And there was no medium to do that. Ms. Lisa has said, what we've discovered is that when we go to the larger the traditional veteran service organizations, there's a deafening gap in services for women veterans or even voices, hearing voices of women veterans. So Sister Soldier Network is an organization that does three things. First of all, we try to make women veterans visible by telling our stories of women veterans and giving voice on behalf of women veterans. The second thing that we try to do is be a resource for women veterans. We try to host a variety of conferences and seminars and conversations and events and participate in events so that folks can, women veterans are visible in a variety of ways. We invite, we've had conferences on women veterans experiencing homelessness. We've had conferences on spirituality in veterans. We've had conferences and discussions about the issues that impact veterans as we try to support our communities and who's listening to us and trying to find support systems for women veterans, whether it's education or housing or being a part of veterans community groups or whatever. The third thing that we try to do is we try to provide support for veterans' spirituality. We engage with bodies of faith and try to encourage them and support them in hosting and gathering of veterans' ministry.
And we'll be back with our guests after a break talking about issues facing women veterans. And remember, you can find our podcast feed wherever you get podcasts. Just search All In and look for our blue and black logo. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. I'm Matt Pelser, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about issues facing women veterans. And this is an encore presentation of a show we did last month, so unfortunately we can't take your questions and comments, but we would still love to hear from you. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. And a quick disclaimer before this segment, we are talking to our guest today about sensitive topics like sexual assault, abuse, and PTSD. And we are welcoming four guests. Of course, Lisa Wilkin is chairman of the AMVETS National Women Veterans Women Veteran Committee. Dr. Dottie, Dorothy Simpson Taylor, is executive director of the Sister Soldier Network. And we have not yet heard from Penny Johnson, who is Indiana supervisor for the National Service Office for of Disabled American Veterans. Emily Quillen is also with us. She's HRO at Aspire Indiana. Penny, we'll start with you this segment. There's a lot that can happen as a result of issues being talked about openly. What do you hope it does for the women veterans who are having the conversations and the women who listen to them?
I'm hoping that it will spark more women coming forward and speaking about the military sexual trauma that they have suffered while in the service. There are women that are currently in the military that is still dealing with that today. And it has to be nipped in the bud. I appreciate Dr. Dottie so much for bringing out the national level, but on the local level, the things, information is not communicated. And the behaviors, Lisa spoke about that, the behaviors, mm-hmm. The way we are trained. You are trained. So you do not speak up. And when you are discharged, you continue not to speak up. When you speak up while on active duty, it's discarded. So nothing happens. Then you come out of the military. It takes a lot of talking and you into filing a claim for the benefits. and then you're denied that benefit. So it's a repeated, receiving repeated behavior that began in the military of a continual punishment for you using your voice to say, this happened to me, this was wrong, and it needs to be addressed. And I believe that women are more apt to come forward if we know that it's going to help someone else. We might not so much for ourselves, especially dealing with military sexual trauma, but we will come forward and speak up and tell our story if we can help someone else. And for female veterans right now that have a voice, that have experienced it, that know someone that has experienced, we should be screaming from the mountaintop because there is attention being focused on the issue right now on the national level. We in our local communities come forward and scream for the women that are still in active duty that have spoken up and either received a dishonorable discharge or moved to another unit or punished before coming forward and speaking out. We can't be punished. We can't receive a dishonorable discharge because we're already out. So here we are, and let's speak up. That's what I'm hoping happens.
Penny, I suppose I shouldn't have been so surprised to know that there is an acronym for military sexual trauma, MST. But here we are, and I was at the top of the show when I heard MST, shortened. Is that, would you say, the top issue right now? I mean, I know there are a lot of issues facing women veterans, but is that paramount?
That's paramount, and I'm going to tell you why. Because there are so many veteran women that have not even come forward to file disability for the benefit that they deserve. And sadly, you deserve it for military sexual trauma from an incident. Women suffer from PTSD due to military sexual trauma, and it's repeated behavior of being brushed under the rug. And if you do not file a claim properly, if you miss anything in it, in reliving it and telling the story again, then you're denied the benefit. So I would say it is a paramount issue because it has been silenced for so long. Years.
Emily Quillen, can you tell us how and why you got involved in efforts around this?
First and foremost, I work with, I work with veterans that are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. And I've dealt with a lot of female veterans that, have either not told anybody and suffer tremendously or have told, and they're still suffering because the DOD doesn't really do anything for these veterans. They're, one of two things happen while they're in service. They either tell somebody and they lose their career, or they don't tell somebody, and if they don't get the proper treatment, their life is gone. They suffer until the day they die. So that's one of the reasons. And the other reason is I am a victim of MST. I do have PTSD. I know what these women are going through. It gives me the opportunity to, help those veteran clients. I'm relatable to them, and, I can help them get the treatment that they need if they're not already getting treatment.
Emily, Penny talked about being denied benefits because you have to keep your story straight when you're reporting MST, military sexual trauma. And it seems to me like the level of scrutiny toward, I guess, cases or suspected cases of MST, it's a little elevated. Any insight as to why?
Well,
That's a good question. I think there are a lot of clinicians that, you know, are taught that they don't want to, you know, give us the compensation. You know, they think that we deserved what happened. And the other side to that is, you know, they just, something like that just does not happen in the military. That's what's in their mind. And, you know, for me, I mean, when I filed, I had to tell my story. And quite honestly, if I would have had to have told my story a year ago, I don't think I would have made it, honestly. You know, I was able to get, you know, some counseling that I needed, and I was finally able to tell my story. And, you know, to have somebody actually listen to me was quite phenomenal.
So it takes time of on you being believed, especially if from the moment of the incident to the moment you can finally talk about it, especially if that time gap is years. And maybe within that time gap, you've already left the military. What does that do?
You know, I found that our brains are, you know, a very remarkable organ. A lot of times, you know, we go through, you know, things like MST or, you know, other things. Our brain kind of hides things. You know, it kind of protects us. And then, you know, somewhere down the line, years, you know, something triggers and it comes out. And if we don't get the help that we need at that point, it just gets worse. So, you know, and it's hard to talk about it when you have not got the help that you need, the counseling that you so need. You know, there are women, there are other veterans that, you know, it's much easier to kill yourself than to have to tell what happened.
Lisa Wilkin, based on the conversation that we've had thus far, when you first started, I guess, thinking about having these big conversations, what kind of reactions did you get?
Thank you. Thank you. It's about time. Those were the reactions that I got from the women that I have discussed this idea with. Some of my male counterparts weren't necessarily as excited about having the conversation, because sometimes some of the things that we're going to say aren't necessarily very positive when it comes to the Department of Defense or the Department of Veterans Affairs or, you know, veterans organizations. But we're saying the things that need to be said, not to be damaging or detrimental, but we want to further the cause so that what we've heard Emily talk about and Penny talk about is how trauma is dealt with immediately after the trauma makes a difference of how that individual deals and processes the trauma. Every person that experiences trauma experiences post-traumatic stress, but whether or not it develops into a disorder can be related to how that trauma is dealt with initially. And so in the military, we kind of have the system already set up that it's not really going to be dealt with properly because of the way it's currently handled. And therefore, we are re-victimizing those victims. And then when they get to the VA, finally, when they're veterans, their ability to reach out and open up is so severely diminished by the years that they kept it suppressed just to survive. And so that's another reason why this is so important, is women veterans and male veterans, because MST happens to more men than it does women. They just tell less than we do. And so us speaking out helps them to be able to speak out as well, or speak silently to someone so that they don't have to suffer in silence. And right. So the response I got was people were excited and somewhat apprehensive. But I think when we finish all the conversations, I believe everybody is going to be happy because we're going to identify some issues. And if anyone knows me or Dr. Dottie or Penny or Emily or really women veterans, we don't ever just complain. We might point out some areas that need some work or we have issues in, but we also come with solutions. And that's what these conversations are designed to do as well.
Penny Johnson, what can be done to make it easier for people to talk about this?
Wow.
There's a lot.
It starts in the military, DOD. It starts there. I believe it starts there. And just starting from there, telling your story and speaking up. Training's great. We love training. But training is not a solution to military sexual trauma. When a female comes forward to report military sexual trauma, she needs to be heard. If it's a female veteran that finally comes forward, and you hear her speaking out to other female veterans, and it's been your story. Reach out. You know, Emily spoke about suicide and the hurt. You know, when people commit suicide, they're not trying to hurt themselves. They're trying to stop the hurt. And reliving it every day, there is no type of service provided when you're in the military. And right now, if you go and you report military sexual trauma or sexual harassment or sexual assault, you go, you give your statement, and then you are advised to go get counseling. But on the side is this. If you go get counseling, then you're flagged. So now you can't get promoted because you're going to get mental health counseling. So it is just the stigma of that, the rules that's in place that must be looked at and must be changed. And again, us working collectively together, this is a everyone issue. Everyone must, and issue is the only word I can come up with right now. This is something that everyone has to come in on. It doesn't matter what your title is, what you do. We have to come forward, and the more we voice, the more things are forward. You know, I reached out to Lisa, and I was just overjoyed about the when she shared her idea with me about the conversations, because, good Lord, everyone in my chapter, so I'm a chapter member in DAV. And we have candid conversations. That doesn't happen in every chapter meeting. Female veterans have to stand forward and say, my sister, I'm here for you. And this is whether it happened to you or not. And for those that suffered from, just come forward. Just come forward. Speak to a veteran. Just come forward. Say, just come forward. And know that you won't be punished for coming forward. You will get connected with the right treatment. You'll get connected with benefits you deserve so you can focus on being well. And it's going to position you to be able to reach it. And so it just continues. We just keep reaching. We just keep playing it forward and reaching.
Penny,
hey, we serve.
Penny, we have to take a quick break real fast, but we will keep the conversation going after that break. We're talking to a panel of women veterans about a new effort to talk openly about the issues they face. And hey, it's Matt. We hope you're enjoying this encore presentation of a discussion we had last month. We'll be back with more in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pilser. Back now to our discussion on women veterans. And one final note on this. Today's show originally aired last month, so we can't get your questions and comments to our panel. But feel free to connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. And a quick disclaimer, we'll be talking to our guests about sensitive topics like sexual assault, abuse, and PTSD. We have with us Dorothy Simpson Taylor, Dr. Dottie, Executive Director of the Sister Soldier Network, Penny Johnson, Indiana Supervisor for the National Service Office for Disabled American Veterans, Emily Quillen, Housing Resource Officer from Aspire Indiana, and Lisa Wilkin, Chairman of the AMVETS National Women Veteran Committee. And Lisa, I want to start with you this segment. How much of an effort do you have to put into, I guess, convincing the DOD, if we want to go big, that these conversations are not intended to be a takedown of the military, of the DOD, but rather a necessary conversation? Because it sounds like whenever these sorts of conversations are initiated, the organizations, you know, the DOD, the military, they go on the defensive and they feel like they have to defend the way things are. And from you, someone who's trying to change the way things are, do you feel like that is a constant battle?
That is a constant battle because it's part of the military institution. Change is hard. Change is hard anywhere, but change within the military, within the DOD structure, is extremely difficult. And so there's been an effort for years to make a meaningful change, and that is how military sexual trauma, how rape is dealt with in the military. Instead of it being reported through your chain of command, the initiative has been to remove that violent crime from the chain of command, making the decision of who gets prosecuted for it, and giving it to the military-based prosecutor. But that has been resisted, and it's still currently not in place. Currently, the chain of command makes that decision of who is prosecuted for rape. Our legislators, our senators and representatives, there's been legislation on the House and the Senate side to make that change. The Military Justice Improvement Act first came out most recently in 2017 as an actual freestanding bill. And it's gotten lots of support over the years, but never received a markup and gone to the floor for a vote. It's been attached to the National Defense Authorization Act this year. Senator Chuck Grassley, along with Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Kristen Gillibrand, quite a motley crew, are offering the Military Justice Improvement Act as an amendment on the National Defense Authorization Act this time around again. And we're hoping that our legislators will leave it in, because it should be a base prosecutor making the decision, not a unit or base commander, because they don't know the uniform code of military justice well enough to know if a rape charge can be sustained. And then there are reasons why the chain of command would try and dissuade charges from being filed. It's a failure in a lot of people's eyes of leadership that occurred under their command. So if they can convince the victim to understand that it's best for them if this is handled within the unit, and that's done by retaliation, it looks better for the chain of command because there's not an assault that happened under their leadership. It could also be that the alleged attacker is a friend of someone within the chain of command, and or they hold a position or do a job that's very important within the unit. So therefore, they're not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize losing that troop. They're going to convince the victim it's probably better if we handle it this way. And that's why we have such a higher incidence in the military, because there's a lot of repeat offense that goes on when people are moved from base to base with no record of these incidents. And so that's why the DOD gets defensive when we talk about this, because the history up until now is ugly. And you may not be aware of this, and your listeners may not be aware of this, but right now, if you are assaulted in the military, you have a choice. You can restricted report or non-restricted report your assault to your chain of command. And what that means is, if you do unrestricted, then you will get health care that you need, and it will be investigated for the violent crime that has occurred. Or you can choose restricted, and you're eligible for health care for what has occurred to you, and it's documented for future health care and or benefits issues, but it is not pursued and investigated. The fact that the DOD has to have both types of reporting reinforces the fact that people are re-victimized when they report and ask for justice for what was done to them. And it's costing the American taxpayers millions, because 90% of MST survivors leave the military within 2 years of their assault. We've invested in those troops. They're specialists. They're subject matter experts. But because they were victimized and were not able to seek justice, they leave. Or their career is stopped because they did report and pushed it, and then they're pushed out. There's also the possibility they're given bad paper, and that means an other than honorable discharge, because they label you as a troublemaker. The fact that they have the two types of reporting, I believe, pretty much screams that there's a problem with retaliation, and people shouldn't lose their careers and their futures sometimes because they wanted to seek justice for themselves. And earlier, the issue of suicide was brought up. And when it comes to our military sexual trauma veterans and a lot of veterans in general, statistics show the majority of them, they don't kill themselves because of weakness or because they can't live with pain, because MST veterans live with a kind of pain that no one can understand. And as an MST veteran, I wouldn't want someone to understand it. MST veterans kill themselves because they feel like they are a burden to their family and friends. And that's why these conversations are important, so that our MST veterans who wear their mask that they wear out in public very tightly, so no one knows what's going on, because that's what we're trained to do, is you tighten up your bootstraps and you just press forward and you put that mask on. And so we need to have these conversations so that some of those veterans who have that mask on can maybe reach out also, so they don't have to wear that mask anymore. And then it makes it so that it is not as prevalent for our young women and men who are currently serving or thinking of serving in the future.
We're talking today with a panel of women veterans about a new effort to talk openly about the many issues that they face, including military sexual trauma, or MST. And we have a listener voicemail we need to get to. This is from David. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, this is David calling. And as for veterans and the way that they get treated, one thing as a delivery driver is, when I deliver to a VFW post, I always notice that when I walk in the door, everybody turns around and I get some of the dirtiest looks imaginable. And I just want to know how they feel about that, because I'm willing to bet that that's part of the problem for women, is that all these men turn around and if they don't see you as one of them, they immediately want you to leave. Just my thoughts.
Dr. Dottie, any response to David's comment about walking into a VFW, not being a member, and being given dirty looks? Is that the sort of thing that women can sometimes face in the military?
Not just sometimes, baby boy, almost every time you walk into any veterans organization, and it's like, whose wife are you? Whose girlfriend are you? Going even to the VA hospital. I went to the VA hospital just recently with my 50-year, I'm 76, with my 50-year-old son, and I was talking about my files so that he could have some education about where to get information about me. And the person talked to my son. I went into a Dottieism with him, and bless his heart, he was about 2 inches shorter by the time I got to telling him about himself. So I just want to say that, yes, it continues to be an issue. And it doesn't really matter what we bring to the table. It's every time. Lisa and I serve on a lot of different, and all four of us serve on a number of different male-dominated bodies. And almost every time we have to state our name and place and claim our space. And I'm only 4'10", but when I walk in the room, everybody listens. And when Miss Penny walks into the room, folks are going to listen. When Miss Emily walks into the room, people are going to listen. When Miss Lisa walks into the room, for sure they're going to shut up and have to listen. I just want to say that it's not because we are troublemakers. It's just that we speak up and speak truth to power. If you're going to be a part of any, or I believe that if we're going to be a part of any organization, we must be able to speak truth to power and tell people, like, for instance, on MST, the Department of Veterans Affairs have been working on MST since 1992. It is 2020, and we're still talking about services for women veterans and men veterans who've experienced sex MST, which is defined as sexual harassment, threatening in character, physical assault of a sexual nature that occurred while the victim was in the military. And despite this mandate, it is 2020, and we're still talking about what the Department of Veterans Affairs offers. When I think about this, and I'm going a little bit tangential here, because I want to just say a couple of other things about MST. When we start thinking about having a history of MST, we're talking about significantly increasing the risk of developing mental health issues, whether it's PTSD or major depression or anxiety or suicidal ideation. There's something that impacts the quality of life, and veterans have this, female veterans particularly in my group, my Sister Soldier Network, talked about increased sexual dysfunction and dissatisfaction as a result of having been assaulted sometimes so many times. I've worked with a 67-year-old woman veteran who had, and I'm going to be real blunt, had a train run on her, and she went to her commander. She was one of the first cooks in the Army, in an Army unit, and had a train run on her by the five men that she worked with. She went to the base commander. The base commander said, these men have families. It took 6 months to get her transferred to another unit. And do you know that everybody, the train never stopped. So when we start talking about how this is happening and why it's happening, the military knows what's going on. We need to have a number of conversations, not just conversations, but actual action that says, take it out, as Lisa has spoken about, take it away from the command, the base level investigation, and putting it outside of the base level. In the case of Ms. Guillen, and I'm moving on, in the case of Ms. Guillen, they had, Fort Hood had the means and had an office there to deal with military sexual trauma. The woman talked about sexual harassment by her superiors. Was anybody listening? Somebody knew about it. Somebody knew about it. And the silence was deafening. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, but I wanted to say that, as this gentleman says, the silence is deafening. I just want to reiterate that.
Dr. Dottie, you were in the military during the Vietnam era, so this is a six-decade issue for you. I mean, have any specific things improved for women veterans since then?
Well, it all depends on what you're talking about. Certainly, the basic training has changed. The uniforms have changed. The conversation about and spaces for women in a variety of career fields has changed. But when I start talking about sexual harassment and sexual assault, it's very slow to acknowledge that anything has changed, because the women that are part of my organization right now and the women that I speak to nationally have all been, not all, but many of them have experienced sexual assault, sexual harassment, and the notion that if you are a female, that's what you're supposed to do. And so you don't have really a choice, much like in the private sector.
Penny Johnson, in our last 30 seconds, what would you like to say to any female veterans who are listening right now who want to have these conversations? Is it time?
It is time. Let's get together. Let's do it. Let's make change. Together we can make change. We're fed up. It's enough. Let's take action.
I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time to talk with us today. Lisa Wilkin is chairman of the AMVETS National Women Veteran Committee. Lisa, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Dorothy Simpson Taylor, Dr. Dottie is executive director of the Sister Soldier Network. Dr. Dottie, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Penny Johnson, Indiana supervisor for the National Service Office for Disabled American Veterans. Penny Johnson, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And thanks to Emily Quillen, housing resource officer from Aspire, Indiana. We appreciate your insight today.
Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow is my conversation with former U.S. Representative and Indiana Democratic gubernatorial candidate Jill Long Thompson about her new book, The Character of American Democracy. In the meantime, we're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.